From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection is being made all across New York State in the booths, the voting booths today. Doesn't necessarily feel like an election day, but it's a primary election day. And even though turnout is historically low on a day like today, some important decisions are being made. Certainly at the top of the statewide ticket, Governor Andrew Cuomo is running for re-election this year, and he would like the renomination of the Democratic Party. He's running against Zephyr Teachout. And Kathy Hochul, who is running with Governor Cuomo, is running for lieutenant governor, and she is running against Timothy Wu. Now, a number of points here. First of all, tonight on this program, from 9 to 11, we always have a rebroadcast from 9 to 11, but not tonight. It's going to be live tonight. I'll be back here live tonight with Tim Neeland, a political science professor from Nazareth College, helping break down what we're seeing across the state. We'll hear from Karen DeWitt tonight. We're going to hear from her later this hour and cover these races and bring all the results to you. And if you want, you can interact as well and join the conversation. So 9 to 11 o'clock tonight, breaking down primary day and the voting across New York State. Now, leading up to this primary, and certainly leading up to the November elections, our goal is to bring the candidates to you on this program. We've had Zephyr Teachout join us. Timothy Wu has joined us. Governor Cuomo has declined interviews on this program so far, but we're glad that his running mate, Kathy Hochul, took the time to talk to us. Typically, we do not air interviews with candidates, politicians on an election day, but it has been a rather extraordinary several days of news. In fact, the last week has just been rather awful, to say the least, when it comes to news. The loss of a Rochester police officer, the loss of Larry and Jane Glazer, and that has kind of moved the calendar around. And so today we're airing the interview in full with Kathy Hochul. You might know her as a former member of Congress after the Chris Lee resignation. The Republican from outside Buffalo kind of went down in scandal. Kathy Hochul won a special election for that seat. Previously, she'd been Erie County Clerk and an attorney. She served in Congress and then was defeated in her bid for re-election by Chris Collins, who is now serving in the 27th Congressional District. Since then, Kathy Hochul has served as a kind of a media relations specialist and done some other work for MNC Bank and some ties to the banking industry as well. So that's a little bit of her background. I had the chance to talk to Kathy Hochul about a broad number of issues in this campaign. Let's listen. It's been said that the lieutenant governor's office is the office where a lot of political careers have stalled or disappeared. I'm curious to know what role you view the lieutenant governor having in New York State.
Well, first of all, I'd like to look at our former mayor and the outgoing lieutenant governor, Bob Duffy, as a role model because he was so intimately involved in the economic development successes in upstate New York. The governor put him in charge of the 10 regional economic development councils, and he had a direct hand in overseeing those as well as literally talking to businesses, encouraging them to stay and expand and create jobs. So I'd say job number one is to continue that effort and actually take it to the next level as we enter the third year of those very successful initiatives to start looking at best practices. I've had the opportunity now to meet the leaders of all the commissions and to talk to them, and I think there's a lot of dynamic ideas that have come out of them, and I want to work on that. But I've also been asked by the governor to head up a whole series of initiatives, starting with the Women's Equality Agenda, something very important to both of us to make sure we get the entire 10-point plan, which includes the codification of Roe versus Wade, make sure that becomes state law, because in so many state houses across the nation, women's rights are under attack. And I'll be working on that. I'll be working on making sure that we have the minimum wage increase. I'll be working on veterans issues. I spent a lot of time as a member of Congress down at the VA in Canandaigua and in Batavia. And as a former member of the Armed Services Committee, I saw firsthand when I went to Afghanistan the challenges these individuals endure in battle. And when they come home, we need to make sure they have the job opportunities, the any mental health services they need. So I'm going to be really expanding the opportunity to serve in that level. So I don't really care what happens after the term. To be honest with you, I don't look that far in advance. I'm just so excited to have the chance to return to public service and really was delighted to accept the governor's offer.
I don't mean to get too down in the weeds on how the legislative process works, but on the Women's Equality Agenda, as you mentioned, there are 10 points, and the Assembly has no trouble passing the entire package together. The Senate has chopped them up one by one and passed 9 out of 10. And, of course, the codification of Roe v. Wade being the point that has drawn the opprobrium of some of the leadership in the Senate, and that has blocked passage of any of these points. And, again, down in the weeds, but it's true that this week Blake Zeff reported Governor Cuomo helped engineer this leading Senate coalition that he knew would be leaning more to the right, and that has prevented some of this equalities agenda from getting passed. How do you go into office, go into your term, and change all of that to get the women's equality agenda passed?
That's an excellent question, and it starts at the ballot box this November when we have the opportunity to elect more Democrats to the Senate, take a true control of it, and have the votes we need to get it enacted. And that's one of the things I've been doing this entire summer at the request of the governor, is to go around and campaign for Democrats to make sure that we stand together. I've done countless women's equality agenda rallies, standing side by side with vulnerable Democrats or Democratic challengers for the Senate, and telling them that this is the platform we need to run on, because women make up 53% of the vote in the state of New York, and only represented by about 20% of women in the state legislature. And we need to change that, but also elect men who also believe in the rights of their wives and daughters and mothers to be treated as full citizens of the state of New York. So I really feel confident that there's going to be a whole new ball game starting in January of 2015. And my experience in bringing people together to accomplish objectives is something the governor knew about when he asked me to handle this. And one more advantage we have going into the next election is that we initiated something called the Women's Equality Party, and we received over 100,000 signatures, far more in excess than we needed to be able to qualify for a ballot line. And what I'm encouraging women all across the state to do, if you believe in these rights, you want them for yourselves and your daughters, if you vote for the candidates that appear on those lines, that'll be a real message to people in the districts who might be wavering, who maybe perhaps Democrats who weren't with us, or Republicans who might want to give it a second thought, if they see a large number of women voting on this line in November. So we're approaching it from a lot of different strategies this time, and that's why I feel very confident about our success.
We're talking to Kathy Hochul, running for lieutenant governor, and you mentioned you accepted the governor's offer to run with him. I know you've read the stories on the Moreland Commission. Were you troubled when you read about the behavior of, say, Larry Schwartz and the potential interference of the Cuomo administration?
Well, all I would say about that is what I've said before, is that what's being overlooked are the accomplishments that did come out of the Moreland Commission. There has been a dramatic change in attitude in Albany, and the effort of the Moreland Commission to start examining culture in Albany, to look at the pay-to-play experiences, to look at corruption, and really to bring together and assemble some very talented people in the law enforcement community to make sure that they could be recommending some real initiatives. And so you need to look at also the fact that for the first time we really have anti-bribery laws with teeth in them. We have disclosure laws on the books that were never there before. We have campaign finance reform and a pilot for public financing of campaigns. So certainly there's been a lot of questions raised, and I understand that, and clearly I wasn't there at the time. But all I would say is that there are new opportunities created by the existence of the Moreland Commission that shouldn't be overlooked.
In the future, should the administration, whoever it is, whether it's a Cuomo Hochul administration or any other, should it be open to investigation if a future Moreland Commission finds impropriety or questions of impropriety?
Well, certainly, you know, that's a crystal ball that I don't have in front of me. You're asking me to speculate on a future Moreland Commission. All I do know is that the governor was not required to assemble the Moreland Commission in the first place. He did that to address a culture of dysfunction and corruption that was going on in Albany when he first took office, as he promised he would do. So I don't know whether a future governor would be convening a Moreland Commission, but again, it's at the discretion of the governor. He convenes it, he staffs it, and it's something that he's directly involved with by nature, that it's a creature of the state government.
All right, moving on to some other issues. You have said that you support the governor's work to get the SAFE Act passed, gun control, but you ran for Congress with the endorsement of the NRA. How does that square? How can you get the endorsement of the NRA and now support the SAFE Act?
Well, I'm glad you asked, because I don't find those inconsistent. And I'm an attorney, and I have the I always look at things objectively in both sides before I take a position. And a lot of the support I received from the gun community stemmed from my work as a county clerk. I oversaw the pistol permit department, and I knew for a fact that there were people of all political persuasions, Democrats, members of the Working Family Party, independents, and Republicans, who were legitimate gun owners, who were sportsmen, particularly upstate. It's a cultural phenomenon for us. And so I recognize that. And I had the support of that community when I was in Congress. But that is not inconsistent. Defending those rights is not inconsistent with my belief that, particularly after Sandy Hook, we need to have tough background checks. We need to have tougher laws on the books to make sure that guns do not get in the hands of people who would do harm to others in a school or otherwise. And I'm talking about background checks and making sure that people who are mentally ill, criminals, and others who would do harm to others do not get access to guns. And as well, the SAFE Act also protects the identity of gun owners. That's something that was important to the Second Amendment community, I recall as well. So I think what happens many times in this business, and I saw this a lot in Congress, issues get hijacked by extremists on either side. And then sometimes it's very hard to see really the rationale that's in the middle. So people who listen to my argument, and I know a lot of gun owners, some of them do not support the SAFE Act, and there's others when you press them whether or not it truly made a real difference in their lives, and the answer is no. And they understand that we do want to make sure that their kids are safe in schools as well, that no harm would come to them because the guns got in the wrong hands. So I'm just going to approach it from a very honest perspective without being pulled in either direction. And again, people will say what they want to say, but I stand by my votes.
My guest is Kathy Hochul, running for lieutenant governor in the Tuesday primary election. Labor leaders and business leaders are on opposite sides on a number of issues that have been discussed recently. So going down a list quickly here, let's start with scaffold law. Keep it, reform it, scrap it.
We need to keep it in place.
How about Wicks law and Triborough amendments?
I'm supportive of those laws at this time.
Okay. On supporting small businesses, where do you see opportunities to help them? Whether it's in terms of regulation, taxes that they talk about, and give us a sense for why the business community ought to be supporting your campaign.
Well, the business community has always supported my campaign because they know I fight harder than no one fights harder than me to keep jobs in our area. But also, I realize, and I fought for small businesses in Congress, I realize that those are the true job creators in our country. I'm a product of a family that started small businesses. My dad left the Bethlehem Steel Plant along with a handful of guys many, many years ago and started a company that became known as Computer Task Group. And they had a presence in Rochester all across upstate. My mother started a small business, a flower shop in my town. So I understand the regulatory burden that makes it difficult for them to get off the ground. And I have done everything as a member of Congress I could to afford them the proper tax relief and the regulatory relief so they can just do what they want to do, you know, whether it's open a restaurant or a small retail or a technology firm. And particularly in upstate in places like Rochester and in the Finger Lakes, we want to make sure that when the young people are educated at our outstanding institutions, and I'm talking from RIT to U of R to the private colleges, Nazareth and Finger Lakes Community College, MCC, we have so many people. They're coming out of these institutions with outstanding degrees. They're sharp. And we want to make sure they stay here. And they feel they have the opportunity to start a new business if necessary, if that's their desire. And that's why programs like the Startup New York are so good to help give them the opportunity and really give them a relief from the taxes that would otherwise be there so they can start and nurture a new business in our community.
School leaders, many school leaders at least, have told us that after the gap elimination adjustment, they've been scrambling to close holes for the last 5 years. They say the state took millions of dollars away and has never filled it. Should the state get rid of GEA, and what would you do about it?
That's something we should be talking about. I've heard that a lot from educators about the loss in revenues, and certainly there's a new opportunity now that we have some unanticipated revenue coming in from a lot of the fines that have been levied on Wall Street institutions and foreign banks. So I say it's a time to take a look at our funding of education, and we're open to any ideas.
New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio offered a strong endorsement for your campaign, but he's tangled with the governor over charter schools. Do you support expansion of charter schools?
I believe that we need to offer children variety and in their opportunity for education. We have to make sure that every child has the best education, the best teachers available to them, that often will come through the public institutions, and I've always enjoyed the support of teachers in the past. They know I fought for them in Congress and have a strong record on that. That's not inconsistent with also believing that, young people need a choice, and that's why there is also support for charter schools.
Let me close with a question topical in the news this week. You've had a background, and I know you know the issue of law enforcement and the legal side well. There have been questions over parole and parole standards in this state. And I know it's a complex issue on many levels of government, but that's a question that Mayor Warren is addressing, that Joe Morelli has talked about, the Assembly Majority Leader. Do you think parole standards need to change? And how do you balance that with protecting the public, but making sure people who are incarcerated also have a chance to try to rebuild a real life that's productive when they're out?
That is so important. And what's been happening in the last 30 years in law enforcement is that there's been this whole movement toward getting just anybody off the streets, the sort of the broken windows argument that regardless of how minor a crime may be, that these people need to be incarcerated, and we're finding a lot more young people who have what would be considered a fairly minor offense when they're 16 or 17 in particular, who now are going to have a record that's going to follow them for the rest of their lives. And how are they going to have the opportunity to get a job when the employer is going to do a background check and they may just not pass it and be able to get employment? So this is something that's very real. We also have to make sure that the standards are not such that people who can continue to do harm to our citizens are released prematurely. So it is a delicate balance to strike, and it requires reexamination on a regular basis, not just to have hard and fast rules of a certain length of time in prison and before parole is activated. It's almost, you want to look at more individual case-by-case basis, and that's something I would support.
That's Kathy Hochul, running for Lieutenant Governor, taking the time to join us on what's been a busy few days here on the campaign trail. She's running against Timothy Wu. We want to let you know that you can hear all of the interviews we've done. Go to WXXINews.org/connections. We podcast every day, podcast every show. And so you heard Kathy Hochul today. We've had Timothy Wu on in the last few days. You can find his full interview there. Zephyr Teachout's been on the program, and we continue to offer an open invitation to Governor Andrew Cuomo. We'd love to have him on the program. You can also expect to hear Rob Astorino and his running mate, Sheriff Moss, on the program as well as we head toward the November election. Okay, so one of the big questions in this entire process of the Democratic primary is whom the Working Families Party would endorse. And we know that months ago now they threw their support behind Governor Andrew Cuomo. But Zephyr Teachout and Timothy Wu have been saying that they are much more in line with the values of the Working Families Party. Well, today, I have the chance to talk to Paul Hsu, a state co-chair of the Working Families Party. Join me from Buffalo to talk about the values of the party and how they see this primary election. In recent weeks on this program, we've had all of the candidates with the exception of the governor, and Ms. Teachout and Mr. Wu tell us that if you look at their stances on the issues, they are consistently more progressive, more to the left than Governor Cuomo and Kathy Hochul. Do you disagree with that?
I would say that they're very progressive, but I would also add a caveat to that, that when I read some of their interviews and some of the statements they've made, as far as it being labor-oriented, they're not very labor-oriented. And I'm not pleased with some of their answers.
Give me an example.
The Working Family Party's history was formed because we thought the Democrats were going too corporate, and we wanted a labor a party in this state that represented the interests of labor. So that's the real history, and of course we've made many alliances over the years with progressive groups. So they may sound more progressive, but when you dig into the meat of some of their statements on issues that affect labor and labor unions, I'm not so sure.
Are you referring to things like scaffold, WICs, Triborough?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if they're not familiar with it, they're showing a great naivety. And when you look at these laws, which were designed to protect workers, whether they're state workers or whether they're workers who work in dangerous situations on scaffolds, to even consider doing away with this or calling them over regulation, it shows a naivety on my part, or on their part. That's my opinion.
I asked both of those candidates about those specific issues, and they said unequivocally they would not change in any way Triborough, Wicks, and Scaffold.
Well, then they should start. They should stop giving indications that they would, because in an earlier statement by Mr. Wu in particular back in early August, he indicated that he would look at that. So I guess they have to get their stories a little bit straighter. Then.
Okay. Now, on this program, the Friday before Labor Day, we had some labor leaders from AFL-CIO, postal workers, building and construction trades, United Teachers, and essentially all of them told us they were disappointed in the Cuomo administration, that the Cuomo administration had been a big letdown for unions, but they were concerned about the possible retribution that would come with endorsing opponents. What do you make of that?
I make very little about that. I'm not concerned about retributions either way. What I can tell you is, and especially with Kathy Hochul on the line with the governor, or hopefully she will be after today's primary, Kathy Hochul, when she was up here in Western New York, and our experiences with her, she has been extremely supportive of many of our viewpoints. So she may be labeled as a conservative Democrat, but in reality, she's been very good for working people and working families, both when she was a clerk up here in Erie County and when she was in Congress. So what we looked at, quite frankly, was when she was added to the ticket, we thought that would be a good voice to get to Andrew Cuomo. I can't sit here and say I haven't been disappointed with the governor's positions at times, but I also see a governor who has returned on-time budgets, has tended to get things moving again, and his overall approval rating in the state still remains very high. Now, am I in love with everything he's done? I can't sit here and honestly say that we are, but we do feel we have an open door to his office.
My guest is Paul Shue, the state co-chair of the Working Families Party, talking to us from...
I'm one of six.
One of six, talking to us from Buffalo today.
I'm not the co-chair.
Very good, very good. Now, it was Blake Zeff, a reporter for, among other things, Salon, and he revealed last week that the governor himself was instrumental in creating the coalition in the Senate, kind of that hybrid coalition of Republicans and breakaway Democrats that has in many ways thwarted a lot of the progressive agenda from the women's equality agenda and more. And there were questions about the creation of that. Blake Zeff reports that it was the governor himself who wanted that coalition. And I know the Working Families Party hasn't been happy with that. Are you concerned that the governor was not forthright with you about his role in creating that? And what do you make of it going forward?
I'm not concerned about that. I know there's been a lot of speculation. I certainly was not a person who was in favor of that coalition that was put together. In fact, I saw it as destructive towards a Democratic majority. I don't know what the governor's. There's been a lot of speculation on what his role has been, and I'm certainly not. I haven't been intimately involved in that, but I do know that in 2010. It was a different situation with the governor at that point, maybe not even caring so much about the Working Family Party's backing, but this time was a different story. We were able to negotiate with him. And in our opinion, his efforts to try and create a real majority of Democrats in the New York State Senate has been real to this date. And that was really the point that turned a lot of votes in his favor at the convention. And it was the first time I feel that we nudged him, that he came out and made some progressive statements that he had been withholding in the last 4 years. So hopefully this is a significant move. And what we're hoping for is that we have a working relationship with him in the future.
When it comes to minimum wage, the governor's opponent in this primary wants to see $15. The governor has indicated more comfort around $10 for minimum wage. Is that issue one that you'd like to see him move on, or are you comfortable with the state's schedule on increasing the minimum wage?
Well, no, I think we have to go further in the state, and I think that, public sentiment has created, let's face it, public sentiment moves progress no matter where it is. I don't care what state you're talking about or nationally. Public sentiment is beginning to shift, and it should have been shifting a long time ago. With the event of fast food workers going on strike nationally and pushing for $15 an hour, this has become a forefront. Many times the media doesn't cover stories like they should. And so progressives have to really push their agenda on the street, word of mouth, whatever. And I think that this is indicating that there's going to be a shift. And I think that we've got an opportunity as more public opinion comes out in favor of fast food workers, for instance, that you're going to see a greater minimum wage. So I think we've got room to work with on this with the governor. And he's also aligned himself on this issue with us. Now, does he say $15? No. And maybe $15 won't be achievable. But if we can move it further than $10 an hour, I think there's an opportunity to do that.
He has said that his biggest concern for this state is taxes, and it continues to be high taxes, whether it's for business franchise taxes, property taxes, etc. And his opponent in this primary has said that she believes that he is favoring the wealthy, that he is not on what she calls sort of a de Blasio mentality that is more progressive when it comes to taxation. Where do you come down on his comments on taxation?
Well, the taxation, we have to nudge him further. I'm not going to disagree with that position. We certainly think that the wealthy have been favored in this state in the past. And nationally, this is not just a state problem. This is a national issue. But again, public opinion is beginning to turn the tide on this issue. And I think that de Blasio has had a great influence with Cuomo. De Blasio's win last year in New York has brought him to the forefront. And let's face it, de Blasio is supporting Cuomo and Hochul. And I think that that will be an influence on Cuomo in the long run. So, you know, you have to look at this pragmatically. I spent a lot of years in the labor union movement with the UAW negotiating contracts. And this is a pragmatic approach. Realistically, I would love to see things change overnight. But it doesn't happen that way, and you know, anyone who thinks that it can change overnight is fooling themselves. So, you know, from a pragmatic point of view, I think there's hope for the future. I think that we are going to have a stronger voice when this governor is reelected with our support, and I think labor will. We will all be hoping that labor has more gains in the next 4 years than it has in the last four.
Let me wrap up with this. The governor said in an interview this week when he was challenged about some of his liberal credentials, here's the governor's quote. Quote, why did the Working Families Party, which is made up of the most liberal institutions in the United States of America, you go to their left, you fall off the planet. Why did they endorse me if I'm such an economic conservative? It's just without basis. First of all, are you comfortable with the governor saying if you go to the Working Families Party's left, you fall off the planet?
No, I'm not comfortable with that. But you know, we all say things at times that maybe was not well thought out. I may be doing that right now. I hope not. But no, I'm not comfortable with that. I don't think that we're far to the left. Our party has always been an issues-oriented party. We're not going to change that position, and we're going to continue to move these issues forward, especially the fair elections issue, which you didn't mention yet. But the governor has actually joined with us on that issue also. Hopefully in the next legislative session, we're going to get some movement on fair elections. You know, I understand that the Senate took a historic vote last night, which received very little news, to overturn Citizens United, which is another major problem in politics. I don't care where you go. There's just too much corporate money involved in elections today, and we have always stood opposed to that. And we would love to see some movement on that issue so that we take the money out of politics. Listen, we're looking for people to go to Albany and to run this state and be real legislators and not spend 60% of their time raising money. And I think that's another major issue that falls off the table at times. And we think that we can push that agenda too with this governor.
But, Paul, I'm trying to be fair here. I'm trying to understand Working Families Party's position on this when it comes to campaign finance. you've got candidates in Wu and Teachout who have made campaign finance reform some of the core of their campaign, and Harvard Law professor Larry Lessig has said that they are the litmus test for real campaign finance reform in terms of this year's elections in the country, whereas you've got Governor Cuomo, who has talked about campaign finance reform, but he certainly did not push it this year. It fell apart. It was, in many ways, according to many people in Albany, kneecapped or set aside entirely when he could have pushed for more. And now that seems to be one of the basis that you have for supporting the governor, even though his record is not all that strong on campaign finance reform.
Well, it wasn't in the past, but again, like we said, when he has made statements since then that he would work with us on this issue, that he sees that. So that he sees that as a problem. And let's face it, I'm going to go back historically. I don't care what period of time we talk about. Talk about Franklin Roosevelt, the famous quote on him when it came to all of the issues in the 30s, make me. And I guess we have to make this governor. This is what politics is all about, whether you like it or not. This is the system we work in. And again, I'm going to fall back to my statement on pragmatism. Even if Teachout and Wu, let me just say, Teachout doesn't get the New York Times endorsement because they say that she is not, she is a novice to the political front, okay? This is just last week, but yet they give it to Wu because his job as lieutenant governor is less, and we wouldn't have to be concerned with his background. So, this is all newsmakers. I still say, in a pragmatic sense and point, and being from labor, you're never going to get 100% of what you want, and we are going to push our agenda and continue. We're not going away. So we're going to defend that position and our support for the governor.
That's Paul Shue, a state co-chair of the Working Families Party, talking to us from Buffalo about why the Working Families Party has continued to support Governor Cuomo and Kathy Hochul in today's primary election. Going on right now across the state, we're going to take a short break and come back here from our Capitol correspondent Karen DeWitt next on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Wednesday on the next Connections, we look at vaccines and the latest research on why they're more vital than ever. Then we focus on suicide prevention. We talk to counselors, and we'll hear from someone who lost a family member to suicide. How to approach the issue when you're worried about the outcome. That conversation coming up Wednesday on Connections.
Join us for a day of fun and discovery during WXXI's Open House, Saturday, September 13th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Come meet your favorite PBS characters, take a tour of the station, and learn how to live a healthier life with free health screenings. For more information, go public at WXXI.org/openhouse.
Welcome back to Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Karen DeWitt, our Capitol Bureau correspondent, is on the line with us. Karen, how are you?
I'm great, Evan.
I just had to jump on Twitter because I thought that interview with the Working Families Party co-chair Paul Shue did help illustrate some of the very interesting differences between the Working Families Party and Governor Cuomo, starting with the fact that Andrew Cuomo told the Washington Post, quote, "You go to the Working Party family's left, you fall off the planet." Paul Shue said, "I don't think we're far to the left. I'm not comfortable with that." But they're still endorsing him. They're still working with him or hoping he will work with them. What do you make of that?
Yeah, unfortunately, I only heard the tail end of that, but it sounded like he was dancing a little bit because they have to support him now. They made that deal back on that very hot, steamy night late in May when they had their convention for many hours, and Cuomo sent what really looked like kind of a hostage video where he, like, promised he really this time he would do public campaign finance, even though he said he would want to do that for the last 3 years and hasn't. He would have a Democratic state Senate and a couple other things. I think it was the Dream Act. So they're pretty much stuck. They've tied themselves to him. They were very silent this summer when the Moreland Commission stuff was blowing up and the U.S. attorney was sending out all sorts of warnings, and they've sort of, staked themselves with Cuomo, and They need to get 50,000 votes in the general election to be on, to stay on the ballot, not have to petition. So they're kind of just have to justify their position at this point, I think. But there's many people in the Working Families Party or the more activist types who would agree much more with Zephyr Teachout and Tim Wu, Cuomo and Hochul's opponents in this Democratic primary today.
And Karen, in some ways, there's the notion of strange bedfellows in politics. It happens all the time. But what's odd to me is that Governor Cuomo appears to be someone who is very socially liberal. You look at the SAFE Act, you look at same-sex marriage, and on the fiscal side, he's more conservative. And there's probably a lot of Americans who are in that category, certainly not all. But he seems to have a hard time just embracing that mentality in this primary. Now, maybe it's the basic setup of a primary where you move more to the edge of a party and then you move back to the middle in the general. But what's your take?
No, you're absolutely right. There's going to be people who are more on the left voting today, and that puts Cuomo in an awkward position. For statewide and for New Yorkers, it's great to be socially liberal and fiscally conservative. Part of the problem is the rise of the New York City mayor, Bill de Blasio, who's very progressive, very liberal, is all about correcting income inequality, many other kind of topics like that. And that has pushed Cuomo to have to go more to the left or put pressure on him. It's no longer, as easy to be just a moderate Democrat in New York State. You're going to get blowback from that, I think. And so that landscape is changing a little bit. In 2010, that seemed the way to go. But it's sort of too late for Cuomo right now. He put, based his record on this. And it's probably going to be okay for him in the general election once he gets past today. But you got to think he's sitting there in his Midtown Manhattan office sort of biting his nails right now, don't you think?
Well, maybe they went into this primary season with a number that they thought they had to get to feel really good about winning today. I'm not saying that it's impossible that Zephyr Teachout could win. I think it would be a shock of the political world, but what's realistic today, Karen?
I guess I should just make that clear. I didn't mean that I thought that Zephyr Teachout would win, but Cuomo would like to keep her at 20% or below, because if she gets 30% or more, then he looks weak with the left of his party, and that diminishes his chances should he want to run for president in 2016 or maybe 2020. So, I didn't mean he's thinking Zephyr is going to win, but he really does not want her to really get anything beyond, the 20% that any challenger usually gets in any primary.
And we should also let our listeners know, and they probably know by now if they've been following this race, this is in the primary, you don't vote as a joint ticket. So it is possible that Andrew Cuomo could win and Tim Wu could win or Zephyr Teachout could win and Kathy Hochul could win. But again, that would also be a shock, wouldn't it, if it went that way?
I don't think it would be a total shock if it were Cuomo and Tim Wu, because Kathy Hochul has a pretty conservative record, at least for the leftist people who are presumed to be voting in this primary. I mean, she was endorsed by the NRA. She made some statements that were anti-immigrant, though she sort of backed off from all that stuff now. So it's not inconceivable, and as we know, it happened to Andrew Cuomo's father, Mario Cuomo, way back in 1982. Mario Cuomo wanted Carl McCall, who later went on to be the state controller. He got former New York City Mayor Ed Koch's running mate, Al Del Bello, instead. And that didn't work out very well. Del Bello ended up quitting about 2 years in, saying that he was just completely bored with the job. So it's happened, and it is a strange way that New York state law works, where you're split on the primary, but then you're kind of fused together in a ticket. Talk about politics making strange bedfellows, whether you like the
well, that would be the
not.
Ultimate.
You're stuck with
that
them,
would
right?
be the ultimate. Wouldn't that be the ultimate? But we should also say that when it comes to the Democratic Party establishment, on this program, Mayor Lovely Warren of Rochester, Ted O'Brien, all the people who are sort of big Democratic figures have endorsed Governor Cuomo, and many of them have appeared with Kathy Hochul in recent days. And so this isn't a case where he's getting a challenge from his left flank and all of a sudden the party is splintering. For the most part, the leadership of the party, at least, the elected officials, have been close to monolithic.
That's right. And that's because they all believe that Cuomo's going to win another term. And why should you cross him? He does have a reputation as being kind of a bully, but even if he didn't, even if you were the nicest guy in the world, you'd think there'd be retribution if you you know, supported a primary opponent, and then he were to win, and then, you know, say Rochester needs some money for something, you know, then he might be less inclined to give it to them. So I think that's part of it. I mean, I think what's really key and what's, you know, what I'm really wondering what's happening right now, who's pulling out more voters? You know, who has the better connections? Is it Cuomo with the state Democratic Party apparatus and the powerful healthcare workers union, 1199 SEIU, or is it Zephyr Teachout and Tim Wu and their small band of their geek squad, as they call them, trying to get the vote out and energizing supporters? And how is that all working? Because that's really what's key right now, because it's a nice day. A lot of people aren't focused on this race, and you got to convince them to, you know, go out of their way, coming home from work or wherever, to get to the polls and vote.
Karen, I got about a minute left here. I like asking the best reporters this question, because Governor Cuomo is a little less accessible than a lot of political leaders, so you don't get a lot of one-on-one chances with him. If you had a chance to sit down with him one-on-one, what's your first question?
I have so many.
It's hard to come up with one, huh?
Put in a box here that it's really hard to come up with one. I guess I would want to pin him down on the debates and why in some elections for him debates are great things and other times they're not. I think that really, honestly, the public deserves a better answer on that.
Karen, always great reporting from you, and we'll be certainly looking for more of your work as we go throughout the day and the evening, and thanks for your perspective as always.
I'll be back this evening, right?
Karen DeWitt, talking to us from Albany Capital Bureau correspondent, and if I may say, just about the very, very best in the business. I want to conclude this hour with a chance to talk to a man who is the politics editor for Salon.com and a columnist at Capital New York Online. That's Blake Zeff. And Blake wrote a piece last week detailing how Governor Cuomo was instrumental in creating this coalition in the Senate, sort of this hybrid coalition of Democrats, of Republicans and breakaway Democrats, that in many ways thwarted a lot of parts of the progressive agenda, including the Women's Equality Act and more. And Zeff's reporting uncovered the fact that Andrew Cuomo was certainly part of the effort to put that coalition together, even though a lot of Democrats were frustrated with that, certainly the Working Families Party and many others. This is Blake Zeff, and had a chance to talk to him about his thoughts on this primary day. So earlier this morning, Blake, I had a chance to interview one of the six co-chairs of the Working Families Party, and they indicated that they don't necessarily buy the idea that Teachout Wu are more progressive than Cuomo and Hochul. And I guess I was confused by that. I thought, you know, it's one thing to say that you think you can move the governor on certain issues where you disagree, but it's another to say that their opponents are not what they certainly appear to be. It was sort of a strange construction. What do you make of the relationship between the Working Families Party and Governor Cuomo?
Well, the funny thing about that answer that you just described is that, of course, the Working Families Party are the ones who created Zephyr Teachout, the political candidate. You know, she was a Fordham law professor and, you know, had some political organizing experience in her background, but she certainly wasn't someone on anyone's radar. And it was the Progressive Working Families Party that sought her out, talked to her about running, trained her as a candidate to run against Cuomo to potentially be their candidate on the Working Families Party line. So this is someone who they're quite familiar with and certainly thought was more progressive than Andrew Cuomo in the days leading up to their convention. Of course, in their May 31st convention, a whole lot of deals were struck where suddenly Andrew Cuomo was, you know, vowing to fight for a Democratic state Senate, which was something that he had not done in the past. He was vowing to support a minimum wage increase, which was not something he had done in the past. He was vowing to support a DREAM Act for immigrant children. Again, not something he had done in the past. So the Working Families Party can take credit for having gotten the governor to start espousing more liberal policies than he had before. But to claim that Teachout and Wu were not there already does seem to strain credulity a little bit.
I also had the chance to ask the co-chair about your report about the creation of this ruling Senate coalition. And I indicated that, you know, based on your reporting, it wasn't just that the governor was aware of it or didn't do anything to stop it. He was instrumental in its creation, this hybrid of Republicans and breakaway Democrats. And obviously the Working Families Party was troubled by that coalition to begin with. And the co-chair's response was sort of, well, you know, I don't know much about speculation, but the governor says he's going to work hard to make sure the Senate goes after progressive ideals. Is that potentially naive? Is that ignoring, you know, reporting now? Or is there maybe some hope that the governor will move on that?
Well, look, it's possible that the gentleman you spoke with hadn't read the report. But what I can tell you from, you know, very solid reporting that we did, I mean, I spoke to a number of people familiar with the IDC thinking, familiar with the Republican thinking, familiar with the Cuomo administration thinking, sources from many different areas. Now we're willing to kind of come forward and say what really happened when the those four or five Democrats broke from the Democratic conference and then aligned with the Republicans to give the Republicans the majority of the Senate. And they say that Andrew Cuomo was not just aware of it, as you say, but also encouraging it and, in fact, actively giving them advice about tactics and messaging on how to sell this to the public. So there's just no question at this point that the governor, that this is something that he wanted. Now, granted, as a result of the deal that the WFP made with Andrew Cuomo in return for giving him their ballot line, he has now said that he's going to fight for a Democratic Senate and that he wants those IDC members, those breakaway Democrats, to caucus with the Democrats. So he, you know, he's in the place that they want him now, but he sure wasn't 2 years ago.
And now with the primary wrapping up today, barring a big upset here, it certainly looks like the governor and Kathy Hochul are going to move on here. We could certainly be wrong, and as we learned from Eric Cantor and some other races, you certainly never know. But do you expect the governor to sort of tack back to the middle against Rob Astorino? Is this the typical political dance where in the primary you move to the edge and then in the general you move back to the center? Or do you think that some of these gains that Working Families Party and some of the more progressive members of his party have tried to force on the governor, do you think they'll stick?
This is the million-dollar question, Evan, when it comes to the governor's race and his next term. Because, as you say, he's mentioned some very progressive liberal proposals and solutions that he wants. But right now he's in a Democratic primary. What he may do after that Democratic primary when he's trying to appeal to people throughout the state, you know, in your area, in western New York and the Finger Lakes area, but also in the southern tier and you know, suburbs of New York City like Long Island and Westchester County, you know, there are a lot of different things that you say in a general election as opposed to a primary election potentially because you're dealing with a different electorate. And Andrew Cuomo's history suggests that he will do what it takes to appeal to the electorate that he is facing in that moment of time. So I think everyone is watching to see just how long these new liberal positions that Andrew Cuomo has, just how long will they last? That is going to be the big question because the Working Families Party, remember, when they made this deal with Andrew Cuomo, they did not extract concessions from him before they endorsed him. What they got from him were promises in the future of things he may do in the future. That's very different from getting the concession first. So there's a bit of an act of faith on the part of the Working Families Party, and we're going to see during the course of this next general election campaign and a potential second Cuomo term whether they made the right decision.
All right, a couple more quick questions with Blake Zeff here. Blake, we've heard from Zephyr Teachout and Tim Wu on this program. They both claim that plenty of high-ranking Democrats around the state have told them privately, I'd love to support you, but I fear retribution. Some union leaders in the Western New York area came on this program and essentially did say those same things. But when it comes to those, the whole notion of fear of retribution, is that overblown, or are you hearing the same kind of concerns about what happens if you don't support the governor?
It's a great question. I have actually heard from more than one elected official, and these are not, you know, super local officials. These are people that, you know, that you may have heard of, who have gotten calls from the governor, or if they didn't get calls from the governor, have heard from their people and really undergone a period of persuasion, shall we say, where they were given reasons why they should, if not endorse the governor, at least stay quiet in the race. So I've absolutely heard that. And, you know, I can't say how widespread it is. I've heard from more than one person. I can't tell you that.
He has not been a very accessible governor by many standards and doesn't do a whole lot of sit-down interviews, has not come on this program. So I'm curious to know, I'll wrap with this, Blake. If you get the chance to talk to Andrew Cuomo one-on-one, what do you want to know from him?
That's a fantastic question. I don't know how to really narrow it down to one. I mean, there are so many places you could start. But what I think is really, you know, in some ways the most mysterious part of the governor, and there are many things, is what exactly is his political ideology? What are the positions that animate him? What are the causes that animate him? It's unclear because, you know, everyone knows that he sort of prided himself on being an economic centrist or moderate for much of his first term. Now, of course, he's seeking he was seeking the Working Families Party nod and also the Democratic Party nomination, and he sounds a lot more liberal now. It'll be interesting to see what he sounds like after that election. So, you know, one of the big things that would be interesting to go over with him would just be, you know, real policy questions. Where do you stand on this? Where do you stand on that? I think the entire state still has no idea where he stands on hydrofracking, for example, hydraulic fracturing. So that would be, you know, just one of the many types of questions. If I was being greedy and got a second question, I sure would like to ask him about the Moreland Commission and what went on with that, but that may be too greedy for me to ask those questions too.
Well, you continue to do great work, Blake. Let our listeners know once again where they can find your work.
Oh, thank you so much. I cover national politics for Salon.com online at www.salon.com, and then New York politics at capitalnewyork.com.
That's Blake Zeff, again, the politics editor for Salon.com and a columnist at Capital NY. All right, so you're set for the primary now. It's happening right now. We see a lot of folks on Twitter mentioning that they voted today in today's primary election, though turnout historically in these kind of events is very low. We'll see. And we'll be right back here from 9 to 11 live tonight. Our engineer, Dave Campo, doesn't know he's working tonight. I just found out. Actually, he's looking at me absolutely stunned. It's not you, Dave. Don't worry. But our good friend Brad Smith and many others will be here. And Randy Gorbin will be here. Tim Neeland, a political science professor with Nazareth College, will be here with me as well as we break down the results as we come in. We'll certainly hear from Karen DeWitt and some others from our statewide network as we follow the election tonight. So hope you can join us from 9 to 11 tonight for a special live edition of Connections on primary night. It's a good time for me to tell you that if you didn't know, we rebroadcast this program from 9 to 11 every night. It's typically just the rebroadcast from noon to 2, but again, live tonight. And it's an exciting week for us at Connections as we've launched on WRUR. If you're listening on 88.5 FM Rochester, we're thrilled to have you and hope that you'll be able to join conversations as we go forward, whether it's on politics, policy, culture, arts, agriculture, entertainment, music, so many other things. Our thanks to our engineer, Dave Campo, today to you for listening. The music for this program is provided by Ra Ra Riot. The song's called Shadow Casting. They're a band that you might hear on, might have heard on WRUR over the recent years. And our thanks to you, of course, for listening. I'm Evan Dawson, and this is Connections on member-supported public radio.